This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. I'm VOA TV senior analyst Jeffrey Young, sitting in for Encounter's Carol Castillo. On this edition, the focus is on Africa and how European nations that colonized the continent plundered artifacts and intellectual property belonging to the many peoples of Africa. For years, this practice went on, filling not only the British Museum in London, but also many other Western curations, as well as fueling a thriving private trade in antiquities. Africans have said these artifacts from the Benin Empire and many other African societies represent to them reflections of their ancestors' souls and their cultural identity. Africans want their treasures repatriated. They want the pieces back. But Western museums have shown reluctance. With us to discuss the call for the return of Africa's treasures are two people connected to the continent. In London, foreign policy magazine writer Nosmont Garmossi, who just published the Foreign Policy article, Is It Time to Repatriate Africa's Looted Art? Also in today's discussion on Encounter is Dr. Andrew Shi, Senior Research Fellow and Obasanjo Fellow with Specialty in African Security at RUSI, the Royal United Services Institute for Defense and Security Studies in London. Both of you, welcome to VOA Encounter. Mm-hmm. I know from living here in Washington and growing up here in Washington and having gone to the Smithsonian Museums for my whole life, I mean, my education came from being in the Smithsonian. And I have seen so many things that are on exhibit there. And when I lived in London, I went to the British Museum and I saw so many artifacts on exhibit there. And I know that there's other museums in other parts of Europe and other parts of the world where literally tens of thousands, some hundreds of thousands of African artifacts are held and on display. I would like to get a perspective from each one of you. Dr. Chi, please open the discussion.
Thank you. And I think for me, what is important to acknowledge here is that a lot of these items, or thousands of these items, should I say, just to correct myself, originated from a history of war, conflict, and deep violations of human rights. And in many respects, these represent trophies of war. In many cases, men were killed in barbaric acts. Women were beaten, savagely raped and killed. Children were trafficked under modern day circumstances and placed under slavery. And I think in light of that, this is something that we should be having a debate about. But also, I think it's particularly in the wave that we're in now, where the museum itself, the British Museum, has come out to release a press statement about this issue, particularly around Black Lives Matter and its solidarity with the movement and with Black people across the world, I think it needs to reconsider its position on this as well. But I think a larger context for me, a larger thinking around this is really about, I would say it's depriving people of their culture, their artifacts, books, and important religious and cultural relics that the museum, in many senses, by not refusing to give back, actually disposes people of their living source of knowledge, history, philosophy, and objects of worship, but also expressions. And I think that's key, particularly someone who comes from Ghana. It's the expressions of life, of our history, that the museum refuses to give back. And that's, I think, important to acknowledge as well. But I think in the larger sort of environment that we are in today, the way in which having grown up in the UK, but the way in which a lot of the collections perpetrate a stereotypical narrative that Europeans have about Africans, which I think today hasn't really been removed, but I think it's removed from its original context and history. So I think those are probably some of the things that I would put forward as reasons why these items should be returned to the countries that they were taken from.
Ms. Barbosi, in reading your article in Foreign Policy magazine, the scale, the size of the looting that was done by each one of the colonial powers, but especially the vivid way in which you wrote the looting of the Benin artifacts, the treasures of the Benin Empire. Take us through that, because not everyone has had a chance to read the article, but I think that is such a vivid portrayal of how these people were treated and how their artifacts and their art and their intellectual property was taken.
What I really wanted to focus on with that article was the kind of violence involved. I don't think that it is something that museums touch on. And that was very much a key point of the narrative in terms of making sure that I was detailing how many locals were killed for those artworks and those artifacts. You know, if we focus on the Benin bronzes, which was looted by the British in 1897 in what is now part of modern day Nigeria, you know, it was a 10-day massacre. At least 3,000 artifacts were stolen. So it's the sheer size, the sheer number, and the sheer sort of totality of casualties that are involved that I think, you know, is important to think about, especially in this current climate of talking about Black lives and talking about racial equality.
Looking at the situation as it unfolded during the time of colonialization, for us in a modern era to look back at this thing and look back honestly and painfully and say that this was not only a physical invasion by foreign people, but it was an invasion that involved the subjugation of the inhabitants of the land that was being invaded to be colonized. And I read about this 10 days of slaughter that went on with the Benin artifacts. And to read that at the end of that, that they put on blackface and donned native costumes and actually had themselves a party celebrating what they had done. I'll let one of you respond to that or just add to it.
I think that was what was very shocking for me in terms of researching for that article and looking through the National War Museum in Britain and coming across those archival images where, you know, you see lots of British troops in this sort of fake African native wear celebrating their capture and celebrating the burning down of a city. You know, Benin City was completely razed. It was completely burned down to the ground. And I think when I was going through the materials in the British National Archives, one of the comments by the military soldier was that no building should ever be erected here again. So it is shocking if we sort of compare it to now, but I think that's what's so important about the debate on restitution, that we have to think about the colonial violence that was involved in the taking of these artifacts.
Dr. Shi, please add to this. I'd like to hear your thoughts.
I mean, for me, I think it's also discussing this thing publicly. And I think one of the things that I'm mindful of is that during a lot of these battles, I mean, I study conflicts, particularly conflicts in Africa, but also conflicts over the years from other places as well. As I said, it's the sheer levels of what we would classify as human rights violations that took place. And it's a discussion that we don't have nowadays. It's almost as if the British Empire then was the only thing that it's recognized for was going forth and basically civilizing Africa. That is it. The death or the levels of violence that took place, the types of torture that was done. In the US, for example, there has been obviously documents about how, in many sense, Black people in America were, Black slaves in particular, to be specific, were lynched, were killed. But I think the UK in particular has always shied away from having that open discussion. And I think particularly for Black people who live in the UK, I think it's something that we are aware of. But again, it's not something that is ever spoken about really within the circles that people might find themselves in. I mean, it's interesting that we in Europe are always mindful to remind the Germans about their history, particularly around the Second World War and what they've done. But yet still, when we talk about this issue of African lives, when it comes to what had taken place, the death, the murder, the rape, as I said, the human trafficking that took place, we refuse to actually not just acknowledge it, but have an open discussion about this issue.
I think it's a sad reflection of history that we look at one empire after another. It was Spain in the 1500s, and then later on it was the Dutch, and then later on Britain had its rise, and then later on the United States emerges, etc. But you have this hubris, this sense of superiority. Each one of these civilizations sets itself upon the rest of the world, presenting itself as, excuse, but we happen to be the master race, and we are are here to basically not only use your talents and your backs and your skills, but at the same time, appropriate whatever we find interesting, amusing, or pleasant that we might want to take onto ourselves. And whether it belongs to you or not is rather irrelevant. Now, maybe that's an idea. What do you think?
I think when I sort of think about the discussion that is happening right now, for me, you know, a lot of the debate around it tends to be on who should hold on to African artifacts. And it tends to start from the viewpoint that countries in Africa are unstable, that they're prone to civil war, and frankly, that they have bad leaders that are prone to corruption and don't have the necessary infrastructure in place to care for these precious items. I know that for the article that I wrote, that was a lot of the comments that I was getting back. But I feel that's the wrong starting point, you know, again, because it is starting from that very colonial rhetoric where African people somehow need to be safeguarded and managed from themselves in this parent-child Western narrative.
Dr. Shee?
I mean, I totally agree with Nosmet here, and I think that is the problem. A lot of this stuff, and in my own personal view and experience, has been through an imperial white savior complex that in many sense continues to view Africa and the continent in need of saving from itself. But I think it neglects the fact that this, to me, the way in which the objects were collected, taken, and removed from their origins or original place homes, for me, is a reminder of, I would say, scientific racism that in many sense created this sort of notion of human zoos, which viewed and still views to this day, I think to a large extent, not all countries, but some countries, Africa and Africans as barbaric and primitive. And I think that conversation needs to change, particularly in the environment that we're in now, but also because, as I said, what it represents from its history. And I think if the British Museum, and I'm not calling out the British Museum in particular, but if museums in particular want to be seen to be doing more and embracing where we are, they need to reflect the times and the debates and discussions of where we are today.
I think it can be brought down to a word, context. Your part of Encounter on the Voice of America. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a big shout out to a loyal listener, Frank Dexter Bruce from Accra, Ghana. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, you can just give us a shout here and leave a comment on Facebook. Now back to our program on the call for Western museums and other curators to return to Africa the artifacts, icons, and artwork plundered by colonial powers and profiteering individuals. Joining me via Zoom from London are foreign policy magazine writer Nosmet Arbosi and from the Royal United Services Institute, Dr. Andrew Chi. I'd like to bring up something here in Washington that has come to being in just fairly recent time. And I bring up the word context. We now have a museum here in Washington called the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture. And in this museum, obviously, there are artifacts from the African continent. These artifacts, according to the Smithsonian, are here so that Africans who are in North America have a place where they can come and look and see not only these artifacts, but see them in a Black context. So I wanted to throw this out to you, the word context. If Western collections are going to hold these objects, should these be properly presented in context? Should there be a narrative built around them so that they are afforded not only visibility, but also respect? Dr. Shee?
I mean, I would say definitely they should be. I've obviously been to the museum in DC, and it's a wonderful museum with a wide range of African American history. So I would definitely applaud the steps that have been taken there. But I think it's important, particularly that the items that are put on display, the way in which they're organized, they're tagged, identified, need to be done by people who understand that culture and history. And oftentimes, unfortunately, the creators of this tend to be white, who oftentimes have a lack of understanding in terms of the history that is involved, the context, but the cultural understanding that is needed to understand and represent these artifacts. It's not enough to say, well, I went to a capital city for a week on holiday to understand how things are done in Ghana, because Ghana is not just made up of Accra, it's made up of various other places. And so I think there is an argument to say, hey, look, needs to be done in a better way. It needs to include more creative directors, particularly from, I would argue, Africa and the African continent, but more so particularly creators who understand and have originated, I would say, to a large extent, or had spent several amounts of time in those countries, to be able to reflect those views and those cultural balances that are required.
Ms. Bartomozzi, what do you think on this context? Can you keep the objects out of Africa, but present them with context to show respect, to show why they exist, why they are important, what their value is? What about context?
I think definitely there needs to be more diversity in Western museums in terms of who is curating these artifacts. I also do think that, yes, definitely there needs to be more of an understanding of the cultural importance of some of these objects. And I think that at the moment, that's very much lacking. But I would also argue that I don't think that looted, stolen artifacts can be held on just so that people can sort of enjoy them. I think that some of these artworks, there are thousands of them that are just being held in storage. I want to point out the British Museum, but with the Benin bronzes, there's around 900 items. I think context alone isn't the solution. I think that some of these artworks need to come back. And I would also argue that what the Smithsonian has done recently, I think a few years back, they had a traveling exhibit where they were showing some of the images from the Royal Court of Benin. They showed it in Washington, and then they transported the exhibition to Benin City. I think that is a kind of fairer, more equal way of presenting these items, where you're having more of an equal access from both sides.
I agree with Mosmit's point, particularly her latter point as well. I think, again, these items need to be returned. And actually, I think the question isn't really about who should they go to. We know they should be going back either to the governments or the museums that are in those various countries in which they've been taken from. But I think it's also an important opportunity, as I was saying earlier, for many of these museums, particularly in the UK, because that's where I'm based, to be able to create bilateral relationships with African museums and to support cultural sites and help preserve some of these existing cultural artifacts, in these countries, and help tell those stories of not just where they were taken and where they've gone to, but also how they were returned. Because that in itself is a story and a journey, and it's part of history. And so I wouldn't just say, look, they should be just taken back, but they also need to be told as part of a wider story.
I only have personal experience in Nigeria. I was there for doing journalism instruction, and I was in Lagos and also in Port Harcourt. But when I was in Lagos, I had dinner with people, socialized with people, and that's when I really heard about the Benin Empire and the artifacts that were taken, and the glory of this civilization and its immense strength and economic power at its time, and how this passed as time went on, but its artifacts remained. And those artifacts were so precious to the people because they reflected a time when they were at the top of the world. Much the same as one might say in Egypt, people look at Egyptian artifacts and say, this came from a time when Egypt was at the center of the world, that this is when we were in primacy. And of course, the people of Benin have every right to say this and want their artifacts as well. Your thought?
So I think if we look at the Benin bronzes, a key point about them is that they are of key cultural significance to Nigerians. They represent kings, they represent queens, they represent past events that happened in Nigeria. And that's why they are so important to Nigerians and why it's so important to kind of have them back in the country. There was a moment, I think it was back in the 70s, when, you know, Nigeria requested back one of the items, Queen Idia, to be able to sort of have it for a very significant cultural festival that was taking place in Benin City. And the Nigerian government was told that the artifact was too delicate to travel. And that was deeply painful for many Nigerians, because this is something that it represents an ancestor. So it's very, very important to have those items back.
I come from a Middle East background, and I'm deeply familiar with artifacts and antiquities from the Middle East, and the fact that bad actors, third-party NSAs, are deeply involved in the illicit acquisition and trade in antiquities. And when you look at Boko Haram in northern Nigeria, and you look at other bad actors around the African continent, and you look at cultural treasures and archaeological artifacts and things, and you see that this is sadly and unfortunately an illicit revenue stream for bad actors on the continent, and not just there, but also bad actors everywhere.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you're always going to have this issue. And again, I don't think that should be one of the reasons why these items are not returned. Yes, you're going to have conflicts. Conflicts are unnatural. I mean, we as human beings, we have conflicts. Even that's something that is just natural that we do. And I don't think that should be used as an excuse. I think, like I said, Africa has things that it's dealing with and has continued to deal with. But it's not to say, you know, all African countries won't have the capabilities of being able to look after these artifacts. That isn't the case. I mean, if you go to places like in Ghana, as an example, the Mina Castle, which was a castle which transported slaves, still exists and is still there. So the argument really for me is not one that holds. Again, these are artifacts that would go to museums. And as I said earlier, if museums and places, particularly the ones in Europe who are refusing to give them back, are so concerned, they can go back and support bilateral relationships with African museums and culture sites to help preserve those items. But again, under UNESCO's own policy, items that would be placed in a particular heritage site would be protected anyway. So there's a whole new argument. But that's, I think, I guess, for something for a lawyer, which I'm not. So I will leave that point there.
Ms. Badamosi, we're getting toward the end of the program, but I'll let you have the closing thought. Go ahead.
There was an interesting report that came out last year about the storage facilities in some European museums, actually. And that was that many of the artifacts that will be on display in the Humboldt Forum when it opens in Berlin had for years been stored in less than ideal conditions, so the artifacts were covered in toxic dust. But I think about 55,000 artifacts were taken to the Soviet Union as spoils of war during World War II and left to rot in damp storage rooms in East Germany. Objects were subsequently misidentified or lost their descriptive tags. So, you know, and these artworks were from South Asia and Africa. So to kind of use the rhetoric that African countries somehow cannot host these objects, I think is wrong, because, you know, some of the conditions that European museums are hosting them are less than ideal anyway.
On that note, I'm afraid that's all the time that we have on this edition of Encounter. I would like to thank my guests, Foreign Policy magazine writer Nosmot Arbosi, and from the Royal United Services Institute, Dr. Andrew Chi. Many thanks to both of you for joining me in this discussion. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Jeffrey Young, sitting in for Carol Castillo. Join us again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.